Welcome to the GBC Big Three podcast, a weekly podcast where we sit down and unpack three big questions raised from our Sunday sermon. I'm your host, Matt Willis, and for those of you who are regular listeners with us, I'm normally joined by Jessica Baker, my co-host, but she's not here today. For those of you who have been listening along, you would know that Jess is heavily pregnant. I can confirm that that is not the reason she's not here today. She's just living her best maternity leave life and just couldn't join us for today's recording, but I am joined by our senior pastor, Mark Rader. How you going, mate?
I'm good. I'm disappointed that I wasn't called the delightful.
Well, you Mark know, Rader, you've got to work for that kind of title.
Fair enough. I mean, I don't think it would have been the word that would have sprung to your lips anyways, but just guessing. <Yeah. laughs> There are other words, so maybe I'm
tyrant,
happy.
Dictator,
maybe I'm happy.
That,
see, now I'm happy that you didn't say anything. Yeah. No descriptive terms at all.
But how are you going? How's your week been? Well, actually, no. I'm not even going to leave it that open because I know how your week has been. Last week, we heard that your ice hockey debut was occurring this past weekend. Mm. It's been and gone.
Yes.
9:30 Sunday night, I believe it occurred.
It was 9:15 game start, but I think it started a little bit late, so it would have been pretty close to 9:30.
Well, yep. So either way, I'm right.
Yes.
How'd you go?
It was great. It was great fun. It was great fun. So,
fun or successful?
It was both.
Oh,
it was both. So we won. We won 5-2.
Congratulations.
And I scored a goal, which was also
surprising.
Well, it wasn't surprising, but it was kind of, it was a pleasant surprise.
It was wonderful.
I was playing defense, so,
you had no right scoring a goal.
Well, you tend not to, taking shots from distance, and one of them went in, so that was great. So I was pretty stoked about that. I had a bit of a cheer squad, so my wife and daughters and a boyfriend and a couple mates came, and so there were like 10 people watching the game because who's out at 9:30 on a Sunday night?
And your family made up 8.
Watching Division 4 hockey. Like, not even hockey's the winner. But so that was fun, and my teammates thought it was pretty hilarious. Because they were just all for the Eagles. So
were there signs? Was there face painting?
No face painting, no signs. I think we'll have to wait for the season to unfold. Well, we'll see how we go.
I expect more of the Raider girls, I've got to admit.
That's right. No, but it was good. It was. I hadn't met all my teammates prior to the game. So,
okay.
So even at training, it's just been kind of all in, and not everyone's been there.
Yeah.
So it's kind of finally nice to meet some of the and put faces to some of the names that I've kind of known on the squad. So I had good guys, and we played pretty well together. Got better as the game went on. So it's quite promising.
No,
so
no major injuries.
No major injuries.
Wow.
No, not even any minor injuries. Wow. Really. You know, I've got a bit of a bruise on my arm, but it's not one that shows up.
Yeah.
So,
and you've still got all your teeth, which I think is a huge win.
Oh, the cage helps. So,
oh yeah, naturally.
So, yeah. So, very successful.
But, well, congratulations.
Well, thank you.
We wait in bated breath to see how the season progresses for you.
Sure you do.
Even when you're on long service leave, I'll be sure to be messaging your wife to just get like, how's he going?
How's
our little hockey enthusiast?
I thought about starting a Facebook page on Mark's hockey journey, but I thought I'm not really sure I want to put that much work in for 2 followers.
Yeah, you don't do Facebook.
And my wife, who would join by guilt. So.
I think you'd get a following. I'd be on it.
I might.
I think I can speak for Jess. Like, you'd have 2 followers there.
Okay, right.
So, already we've doubled your listenership. So.
Well, I have to rethink my social media strategy.
We'll wait and see. Well, for those of you who missed it, our senior pastor, Mark Rader, preached during our services this past weekend, returning to our series, Renovation, Rebuilding for Purpose. Mark spoke from the book of Nehemiah, speaking on how we manage in the messy middle. And you can listen to that message again through our regular GBC sermon podcast. But today, as always in the Big Three, we're going to keep the conversation going from Mark's message. I'm going to be putting the Big Three questions to him as we dive deeper into the invitation from this week's sermon. But Mark, why don't you walk us through our Big Three for today's episode?
All right, well, here we go. First of all, how do you stand against opposition when a practical response isn't available? Okay. Reflecting that Nehemiah at least had something to do.
He had something to do, and that was
post a guard, all that kind of stuff. But okay.
A wall to build.
Yeah, it's good. Number 2, Nehemiah attributes his plans and work to God. Could this get out of hand when leaders say their work is God's work?
Hey, there's a pointed question.
There's a pointed question. What are you suggesting? No. And 3, is it the role of the church to always remain in the messy middle? Well, that's good. That whole idea of the, you know, in the already but not yet.
Yeah, absolutely.
Kind of space. So, yeah, those are great questions.
And I kind of hope, if I could just jump the gun, that the answer is not yes. I know. Because that would suck. But we'll get to that. That's the last question. So you've got some time to think of how we're not supposed to remain in the mess middle. Please.
Gotcha.
But for now, let's get into the big three. So, Mark, as you just kind of went through, our first question is ultimately around how we stand in opposition and remain in the plans and purposes of God. Nehemiah had really practical things that he could do when the armies were kind of on their way. He continued the work on the wall, but he also set guards. He strapped a sword to his thigh. Like, he did things. How do we stand against opposition when a practical response like that isn't available to us?
Yeah, I'm just trying to kind of rack my brain about a concrete example of facing opposition where there isn't a practical response.
Where you just got to face it?
Yeah, that's right. But I guess ultimately the question's asking, like, how do we persevere? You know, because there are some instances, like I dabble in church history, and and one of the debates in the early church, whenever the church faced persecution, was what was the appropriate thing for particularly the church leaders to do, right? Should they stay and, you know, care for the flock and face greater persecution, imprisonment, maybe death, which might be long-term bad for the congregation? Should they go into hiding?
Yeah.
Right? That kind of question. And to some degree, that feels like the practical response was to go into hiding, take the sacred books, keep them safe, wait till this blows over, come back. Obviously not always a straightforward answer. And I think various persecutions in various places in the early church led to very different answers and all that. But I think ultimately it is asking the question of how do you persevere, even if there is a practical response, right? So, you know.
But obviously it's harder when there isn't, because a practical response gives us something to put our hands to.
Yeah, that's right. To distract us a little bit from the opposition.
And at least kind of go, okay, there is a plan and I'm a part of that plan. Yep. But persevering
where your options are limited.
Yeah.
And maybe that's a better way to think about it, right? Because sometimes I think there's nearly always something we can do.
Yeah.
Whether that's particularly helpful, significant or not is another thing. So I reckon that, you know, when you think about Nehemiah's response, I reckon that part of what enabled him to persevere was that he was very clear on God's call on his life. Like he really knew this is what God is calling me to. These are the plans and purposes that God has for me right now.
Yeah.
And that, and I reflected a bit on that in the sermon, the idea that when we have a clear sense of God's call, it doesn't make the opposition, the hardship, the difficulty, the messy middle any easier or less messy. But it does give us kind of something to stand on. Because I think one of the challenges that we face in opposition is not just the opposition.
Yeah.
Some of the kind of the existential questions that it raises.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, if we face up, we start doing the work of God and we face opposition, I think a very natural question is to say, did we get that wrong?
Yeah.
Because you'd kind of think, if I'm doing the work of God,
I'm just going to sail on through.
Yeah, or that there might be some bumps along the way, but, like, you know, generally speaking, I'm on the winning side.
Yeah.
So, you know, off we go. Or, you know, did we discern the call of God or the invitation, but have we done something kind of wrong? Have we done something, you know, foolish or stupid or whatever the case might be? Is God displeased with what we're, like, those sorts of questions become really pressing. And so I think a sense that God has called us to something gives us a place to stand and say, okay, things have seemed, they've gone off the rails here for whatever reason, and yet I know that God's called me to this. Now, you know, I suppose you could argue that there's a place where we can just become obstinate and stubborn, and that becomes our ground.
I hear people respond that way.
Yeah, that's right. So I think that understanding what God has called us to and what his purposes are, that's a really helpful first step to persevering. I think that it is then really helpful to have other people that you are persevering with.
Yeah.
Right? Like, even though these are, you know, scholars would talk about this section of Nehemiah as like Nehemiah's memoirs, right? Mm. Because they're written from his perspective.
Yeah.
You know, so we said to guard, and I did this, and I said these things to those people and whatnot. But he was doing it with other people. Mm. And that's really helpful as well, right? If you are isolated and facing opposition, that becomes so much more
that's
difficult.
Rough.
Yeah.
Mm.
You know, and even Nehemiah reflects on that, that the work is spread out.
Mm.
You know, so that the workers were a little bit isolated from one another, recognizes that that's a difficulty as well. So I think those are the two things that kind of spring to mind.
Yeah.
As we encounter opposition. Mm. And I think it's probably not, as I said, it does tend to raise some of those existential questions of, did I get this right?
Yep.
All those sorts of things. And you don't want to be just doing something because you're obstinate and say, I know exactly what I should be doing and whatnot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I think that there is also an invitation in opposition for some self-reflection, right? Like, again, you don't want to stop what you're doing until you're certain that God's calling you in a different direction or whatever the case might be.
Yep.
But there is an opportunity to stop and pause and go, okay, like, how have I contributed to this?
Mm.
You know, because sometimes we can end up with a bit of a martyr's complex, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, everyone's against me. And
let me just fall on the sword.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're like, well, you know, maybe I've contributed to this in some way, shape, or form. You know, we talk a little bit, you know, internally about, you know, the kernel of truth in say, criticism.
Yeah.
You know, that even if it's poorly delivered and badly timed and, you know, filled with inaccuracies or misrepresentations, there's nearly always a kernel of truth where you kind of go, okay, I need to actually hear that.
Mm.
And so I think opposition and the messy middle, you know, when things are really hard, you know, it's like, okay, let's kind of pause for a moment. Just how have I contributed to this? You know, that sort of stuff. And I think, you know, the messy middle image is actually quite helpful. It's the title of a book. Well, that's I thought I'd heard the phrase somewhere, and so I looked it up.
Yeah.
And it's apparently a book. I think I mentioned it on Sunday. It was I think he's an entrepreneur, but he's writing about startups and
the
messy middle, right? So, and I just kind of jumped to the whole, I think I know, without reading your book, I think I know what you're talking about. You know, but I think, you know, to that image, I think also invites us to, I think, one other way to face that opposition. And even if it's not opposition, it's just that messy middle of being too far from the beginning to remember why I was so excited about this and too far from the end to anticipate the end. I think it's often helpful to, if it's that messy middle, not necessarily the opposition, although it counts there, to just remind ourselves, which is kind of related to God's purposes, like, what's the vision?
Mm.
Like, if I persevere, what's the outcome?
Yeah.
And I think, you know, for Nehemiah, you can imagine him saying, you know, like, oh man, this is hard.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't mention it on Sunday, but I did remember reflecting during the week. You know, when he shows up in Jerusalem and he hadn't said anything to anyone?
Mm.
And you're like, that's a little bit weird that he wouldn't say anything to anyone.
Poor social skills.
Well, until you realize that, I mean, they're 3 weeks into a project and he already has death threats.
Mm.
I'm like, that's probably why he didn't mention anything.
Yeah.
Like, he recognized just how volatile the political situation was. And so to kind of keep his cards to his chest as long as he could was actually probably really helpful.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, for Nehemiah, you can imagine in the midst of that opposition that ramped up so quickly, one of the things that I would imagine encouraged him was, you know, God's purpose, but also thinking about what this would look like when it was finished.
Mm.
Not in the sense of, oh, it's going to be an amazing wall, because I'm not sure that it was going to be, but it was going to be a finished wall. There's going to be gates, and the city would have some honor again, and there was some protection, and, you know, like all the stuff we talked about, the symbolism of the walls. So I think that reminding ourselves of the vision can be really helpful.
Yeah.
You know, I think in the past, the last 2 years have been quite disruptive, so we haven't really had the same conversation, but usually term 3 blues.
Yeah.
For those in ministry.
It's winter.
Yeah. I can imagine teachers feel the same.
Yeah.
Anyone who kind of works in that year-long rhythm where it's, you know, middle of July, end of July, it's cold, it's dark, You cannot remember why you were so excited about this.
All the things that you told yourself about how organized you were going to be and all the life skills and how
all
on
gone
top
out the
of
window.
It. You've lost it all.
But you're not near enough the end of the year to start planning for next year.
No, or so just a holiday.
Yeah, that's right. So, like, I think that, you know, those sorts of things can be helpful to help us hang on in the midst of opposition, even when there aren't intensely practical things to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. No, that's great. Right on. Well, let's get on to question two. So obviously a threat comes in to Nehemiah and he just kind of, he keeps going. Like, I mean, he hit the ground running from day dot. He had a plan. He knew what he wanted. And all of this has come from God. Like, he feels a real sense that God is calling him into that. And so when this opposition, when he's faced with this opposition again, he gets to work. He kind of prepares people and arms people and puts guards everywhere. He attributes his plans and work to God. Could this potentially, for Nehemiah as a leader and potentially any other leader, could this get out of hand when leaders say that their work is God's work?
Short answer is yes.
Great.
Like, you know, I have been reflecting over the last 2 or 3 weeks in particular. You know, if you follow the news of terms of Christian leaders who have failed, the list seems to be growing every month.
Yeah.
And you know, you don't have to be a genius to kind of discern that there's a couple of really prominent themes in those failures. You know, one of them is the whole, generally speaking, that kind of sexual harassment, sexual inappropriateness, you know, those sorts of things.
Yep.
But alongside of that, in nearly every case, seems to be some kind of cult of personality where accountability and questioning are not
in the process.
They're not really in the process, where loyalty becomes really important, where there's a real sense that whatever he says goes.
Yeah.
Right? I don't remember if there are any women on those lists, but I can't remember one. So
you know,
if I'm not being gender inclusive, I'm sorry, but I'm pretty sure most of the ones I've seen have been men.
Yeah.
And so there's a, I think there's a poor leadership context.
Yeah.
And culture. And that's, I mean, that's the thing that, you know, I think because I've been reflecting on, that's what kind of jumps out at me in that.
Yeah, absolutely.
In that question. And so again, I think the short answer is yes. You know, if you know, and I think that there are, I know that the question's not about, you know, those mega church pastors, but there are some, I think there are certain characteristics about mega churches and mega church pastors that I think make for a pretty toxic recipe if you're not careful, right? You know, if someone's going to build an organization that big, they're probably a charismatic, A-type, driven, entrepreneurial, networking, like, you know.
Yeah, which are not necessarily bad things.
Not bad at all. But when you then get to that critical mass and there tends to be that kind of sense of
celebrity.
Celebrity.
Yeah.
You know, which at one level it's like, yeah, they kind of are.
They're a big deal. They've, you know, they've achieved things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And however, they do. And again, and the celebrity component, they're really well known. And it's not necessarily bad either, but the combination of those things.
It creates a concoction, doesn't it?
Oh man. That if you don't have the accountability, if you don't have a decent leadership culture, it can get out of hand real quick. So that's kind of my immediate, that's
yeah,
the background.
Fair enough. It's
to my immediate response.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, from a leadership perspective, oh man, like it's a really, it's a fine line, right? Because, you know, speaking personally, I'd like to think that what I am doing and how I am leading is in line with, right, the will of God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it might not be, you know, a vision that I have had about what I am to do, but that generally speaking, that what I'm doing is attempting to lead this congregation in a particular direction because it's in line with the will of God.
Yeah.
And I think it's important as a leader to be convinced of the importance of what you do.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, it's not a matter of saying, oh, listen, we could go anyway. We can go, you know, one of six directions. It doesn't really matter to me. Like,
yeah.
I don't think good leadership is like, yeah, whatever.
Like, it's not really leading.
Yeah.
Then,
like, I think there is a real sense of kind of pinning your colors to the mast kind of and saying, this is what I think that we need to be doing. And again, I would like to think that where I believe we need to be heading is in line with God's will.
Yeah.
It's so fine, but when does it become God's work that justifies what I want all the time?
Yeah.
And that's probably not the best way to say it, but there's a dynamic in that. You know, I'd like to think that I'm following God.
Yeah.
But I can end up using that as, and this is probably how I would respond to the question about, like, you know, how we need to address that.
Yeah.
Right? Because I think that I can end up then, if anyone questions where we're going, I can use the whole, well, God told me that we should go here power card.
Yeah, which is dangerous.
It's really dangerous. Mm. Particularly, it's dangerous at the best of times.
Yeah.
But particularly when you have influence, that can be really hard.
Mm.
You know, I think that as a Baptist church, I think our kind of our ecclesiology, how we do church, kind of helps us a little bit in this space.
Yeah, well, that was part of my thought as you've been speaking. Like, one of the defining elements of a Baptist church is that priesthood of all believers, that we believe in, like, the role of membership and how
congregational government
exactly
and all that sort of stuff. So that there is some validity then. I think it, and what that does in the best instances is that it creates it creates a platform for leadership humility, right? In best case, right? Because I recognize that while I have been set apart and appointed to be the senior pastor of this community of faith, that I am set apart as one member amongst members.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, there's, you know, and that therefore that while I have certain delegated authority and responsibilities that may be different, that ultimately I'm still part of the community faith. So I think that there is some built-in space for humility and there's some built-in space for questions and accountability and those things that are really helpful to avoid that.
And not to say that the Baptists are free from these kinds of power misuses and mistreatments, but, you know, it is – these are helpful platforms that we have in place.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, as a leader, kind of anyone who has influence, I think we need to be asking ourselves, you know, we need to try to be aware and kind of differentiate ourselves a little bit from God's work and our work.
Yeah.
You know, and just a little bit of space to say that I am participating with what God is doing, not God and I are doing something together.
Mm.
Now, there's a very, very fine line because they could both be said to mean the same thing.
But yeah.
I hope, like those of you listening, I hope you kind of get what I'm trying to say, that I don't want to associate the work of God so closely with my work that to question what I do is to question God.
Yeah.
But again, as I think as a leader, I want to be pretty convinced that what I'm doing is what God's called me to.
Yeah. You know?
And so I do think that, it's a really thin line, I think, in some cases. And so, you know, being, you know, one of my reflections out of these church leaders who have abused power or haven't been held accountable in ways that perhaps they should have. And I want to acknowledge, I don't know the fullness of those stories.
Yeah.
But I think one of the things that's come out for me is thinking, how do we as a community faith here, how do we strengthen people's trust that we're not setting ourselves up for that?
Yeah.
You know, because you don't have to be a mega church to have this kind of...
to have a blind spot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, or, you know, to abuse power or whatever the case might be. And so I've been thinking a little bit about that whole role of accountability and what does a leadership culture look like that is slightly less prone to and perhaps a little bit insulated from some of those abuses of power because you've kind of set it up well in ways that go beyond would just trust me.
Yeah.
You know? You know, whether that be regular reviews or regular external reviews or certain, you know, and I mean, I think policy is important, but like really simple policies.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of just help establish particular things, practice it, like all those sorts of things. A lot of that's been kind of bubbling around in my head. So I don't, you know, whoever asked that question, I hope that that's come close to answering what you intended or maybe it's just been hijacked by what I've seen on Facebook. But anyway, like I think it's in that space. So.
No, I think, you know, can this get out of hand? Yes. So it's important that we're having these conversations around the accountability of leaders and the accountability of ourselves as leaders. So no, I think it was a good one.
Right. All right. Well, there we go.
There you go.
So we both think it was a fine answer. And because it was our answer, it was God's answer? Is that?
No,
we're not going there.
Saying.
No, we're not going there.
So ultimately what
I've got it wrong.
If anyone disagrees, they're welcome to do so. Now, before we say anything else, let's move on to question three. I found this question an interesting one when I read it on Slido, because I guess it speaks to something bigger than just our everyday experience of seeking to work within the plans and purposes of God. But, you know, you spoke about the messy middle of not quite being close enough to the beginning that we're excited of what's to come and being not close enough to the end to feel motivated to cross the line. Is it the role of the church to always remain in the messy middle? Please say no.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting question. Like if the messy middle is that period, you know, after the initial fervor of the start has waned, but before we can really get excited about the end, then I suppose that at a universal level, yes.
That wasn't the answer I was looking for.
But in that sense, you know, I think I mentioned it when we read the question. You know, it's that you know, theologians talk about the church is existing in the between the now and the not yet, between the times. You know, that Jesus has done this amazing thing in the past, and he is going to do something amazing in the future.
Yeah,
and he's doing something amazing now. But like until there's that consummation and the kind of the end of suffering and sin and death and the wiping of every tear from our eye, we are kind of always stuck in the messy middle. But I think that, you know, while that may be true at the 10,000 foot level or 50,000 foot level, whatever it is, the closer you get to the ground, shall we say, I think the more opportunity there is to not always live in the messy middle, right?
Is there? Because like as you're speaking, I'm kind of thinking, well, I mean, it applies at that 30,000 foot level, but doesn't it also apply on the ground in our journey of faith? Like we will never arrive until the end, like in the sense our growth and deepening of our discipleship and our spiritual maturity and all of that. Like it felt like we've moved away from an older perspective of once you're a Christian, like you just need to be the model of perfection and morality. Yeah. And although, you know, there's still truth to that, although I'd take the perfection away because I just think you're setting yourself up to fail. I think we now speak more about, you know, that we are on a journey and it will take time. And ultimately, like I know for me, like it's been a hot minute. It's probably been quick math 17 years since I became a Christian. So it's been a while since the beginning, since that initial excitement.
Yeah.
I don't plan to go anywhere anytime soon. So like it feels like I'm in the messy middle. Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah. And I think that again, I think even from a personal perspective, that's almost the 30,000 foot level in our personal lives. Because it's I think you think about Nehemiah.
Yeah.
he would have had those same, you know, like the story of the history of Israel or the story of his life. But he also had within that this nice little neat project that had a messy middle, which was rebuilding the wall. And it started and it finished, and look at that, the wall's done. And I think that there's quite a bit of those sorts of things in our lives that we can kind of, you know, even in our discipleship, you know, want to read through the Gospels. So we read through the Gospels and, you know, okay, it's a bit of a slog in the middle, but we start, we finish, and we're done. You know, we want to you know, ask the Holy Spirit to be at work in developing a particular virtue in our lives.
Yeah.
And we start out and it's just hard work and we think we're never going to get there. But over time, we kind of, while we may not be perfected in terms of our patience or our kindness or whatever the case might be, we make advances, right? We see maturity, we see growth, we see development, and we kind of go, hey, that's great. And I think that, you know, in the life of the church, you know, people in ministry, we talked about the term three blues, you know. The nice thing about term three is it's followed by term four, where not only is it getting sunny outside, but like, you know, we're about to complete a full year of ministry. There's been some great stuff that's happened. We can start planning about next year. And so I think that there are lots of little cycles that we can find some comfort in, shall we say. And
maybe some sense of achievement.
Yeah.
It's got me thinking about, I mean, you and I talk a lot about the difference between tasks and projects.
Yeah.
Projects are huge. You feel like you never achieve them because they're just too big. You can never get to them. And it feels... Life is a project, all right? At an individual level, at an existential level, life is a project. But that's not to say that we don't tackle tasks.
That's right.
Personal or otherwise, you know, as a community of faith, that we, you know, can make our way through. There will still be a messy middle, but we can make our way through in this lifetime.
Yes, that's right. Well, this term.
Yeah, even.
This week, you know.
Let's not settle down. Let's not set a goal that we can't achieve.
Oh, it's a goal for you, not for me. So.
It's already Wednesday.
Even worse, that's right. but I think you're right. I think that, you know, part of our balancing of those things is to have a little bit of both, right? Mm. I don't think we ever want to assume that, you know, the only thing that matters is what I'm doing today or this week or this term or this year.
Yeah.
We do want to keep that bigger perspective of, we're waiting for something great to be consummated, something that's already started. We see evidence of it already.
Yeah.
But I think it is equally important to have some of those smaller victories that you can kind of go, oh, look at this. You know, I've grown in this area.
Yeah.
I've accomplished this discipleship activity. Mm. I have, you know, joined a life group, whatever the case might be.
Yeah. I've done more than just binge a series on Netflix.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Which is not a bad thing either. That's a great goal. Let me affirm that in your life.
Okay. The opinions of the host are not necessarily the opinions of the... little disclaimer there. So I think that's an important piece. But to the question, I think that the church does in many ways function in that middle space.
Yeah.
You know, and to some degree, the things that we talked about in the first question kind of fit here as well. It means that even if we don't face really overt, explicit opposition, we still need to persevere, you know, and remember not only kind of where we're heading, but also keep our eyes open, which is kind of part of what the point of the sermon was about, even in the mess, looking to see where God's at work. Mm. You know, I think that was... You know, that was for me. I hope it came across as clearly as I think I felt it during the week. But I think I mentioned, you know, the fact that the people are complaining about being worn out and having too much rubble.
Yeah.
And the fact that that's never addressed just drove me nuts. all week long, I'm like, that's a huge problem. Okay, I take it you've got armed people threatening to kill you. That's a big deal too. But like, if you don't have anything to work with and nobody to work.
Yeah.
What does it matter? So that whole idea of being able to look for the hand of God and just that little phrase that God had frustrated their plans.
Yeah.
Kind of going, all right, so that invitation to go back over the story and go, okay, God's here somewhere. Mm. Where is fingerprints in this thing? It was a really helpful exercise for me just in terms of reading scripture. But I think also just a really good reminder that, you know, in the messy middle.
Yeah.
I can't get bogged down in the messy.
Mm.
I've got to be looking ahead to remember why I started this in the first place.
Yeah.
Like, why am I here? Well, it's because of where I'm going.
Yeah.
If I weren't going someplace, I wouldn't be in the messy middle.
Mm.
And then to actually pause and look around and go, okay, if I believe God's at work because of where I'm going, right?
Mm.
Jesus is going to make all things new, and he started that in such a significant way in his death and resurrection. Then I ought to be able to see his fingerprint somewhere.
Yeah.
And I think that will help sustain us in the midst of what I think is probably fairly accurately, the eschatological messy middle. Right?
But I think that, like, as you've been speaking, I'm reminded of what you said in question one, where it's the whole, having people around you. And, I know that many people have, kind of come out of COVID and are deconstructing their eschatology, like deconstructing what church.
Ecclesiology.
Ecclesiology, sorry.
I'm currently
doing a theology subject.
Got your wrongology.
I know, I'm so sorry.
But it started with E.
Guys, I'm still learning.
It's kind of the theological wordle.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Except with more letters. So the E is right and in the right place. So it's green.
Can I finish my point?
Yeah, please.
Thank you. Gosh. Trying to rein this guy in. No, but people have come and kind of, questioned the role of church in life now. Because I guess, for 2 years we couldn't participate in the way that we had been for 2000.
Yep.
But again, this kind of conversation, it would be really hard to be in the messy middle of faith, because and what we're saying is you do experience it in that personal individual space. It would be really hard to do that by yourself, and it highlights for me the significance of church community. Yes, you can be a Christian and not attend a church.
Another statement of a Baptist ecclesiology, but yes.
but far out, it would be hard. I would get lost a lot in that, I think
problems get too big when you're on your own.
Yeah.
Having someone else's perspective to say, either it's not that bad or it's worse than you think.
Yeah.
Either way is helpful. and trying to see the hand of God, and again, kind of the hidden hand of God, quote unquote. That requires lots of eyes to be on the lookout.
Yeah.
So I think you're right. I think there's something really quite profound about having a community. Scholars would talk a little bit about interpretive communities in terms of how we interpret scripture, but I think it's also true about how we interpret what's going on in the world and what's happening in our community of faith and those sorts of things. So having a group of people to help us make sense of where we are is I think a really critical piece of that.
Yeah. What a great place to end, I think, with an invitation to join us for church this Sunday. What happens next in Nehemiah.
There you go. That's right. Well, we're actually going back to the start of chapter 4. So Belinda will be preaching this week. The chapter itself is all focused on opposition. But the first part contains a kind of a different response of Nehemiah in terms of his prayer and what we learn or don't learn from that. So looking forward to hearing that.
Well, we'll see you there.
Yes.
Thanks for joining us, Radar. Well, if you want to be a part of the conversation, make sure that you're there at one of our services this coming Sunday and that you snap the Slido QR code or follow the link before the sermon to get involved. If you've enjoyed the Big 3 podcast today, take the time to give a star rating and be sure to subscribe to stay up to date with all future episodes. Well, thanks for joining us for this week's Big 3 and our deep dive into God's invitation for us all. Remember, there's no thought too small, no question too big.